Everything we do at Amazon really is driven by our leadership principles. It drives behavior. It drives how we make decisions. They help us keep us track and focus on what's really important. I'm going to always refer back to the principles and make sure that my thinking is in line with those. You know, are we thinking big enough? Is this really the right thing for the customers? Have we dug deep enough into the problem to know that we're making the right decisions around that? And it's a great guideline to make sure that we are staying customer obsessed and we're being consistent. And that consistency is good for our partners because they always know what they're going to get. And ultimately, I think it just creates a better place for our mutual customers.
If you're a technology partner looking to optimize your engagement with the tech giants like Microsoft, you're in the right place. Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to the 40th episode and another milestone for The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. For my very first interview episode with Amazon Web Services, I was pleased to welcome to the podcast Dan Kaysen, who leads the ISV strategy for AWS's public sector business. In this episode, Dan and I discuss how his team is organized, what makes AWS's core value proposition unique, the company's leadership principles and culture, how he thinks about great partnerships, and his career journey. Most customers are choosing a multi-cloud strategy today, so this episode should be of particular interest to any organization considering this approach. As with each of my episodes, I appreciate your support. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell your friends about it. And I'd love your feedback. Please provide a review or drop me a line at vincem@cloudwaypartners.net. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Dan, welcome to the podcast. Your team engages partners across AWS's worldwide public sector business, and I'm excited to spend time with you today discussing the company, your team's mission, and what you look for in partners. So welcome.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you. You and I had the opportunity to work closely together when we were both at Microsoft, and you were my first guest from Amazon or Amazon Web Services. So I'm eager to dive in on the business, the culture, and the partner ecosystem and just, you know, engage here in this conversation. Can you explain to our listeners in simple terms what you do at Amazon Web Services and how your team is organized?
Sure, Vince, and happy to be the inaugural Amazon Web Services representative here. So my role at Amazon Web Services is I am the lead for the Worldwide Public Sector ISV Alliances organization. So essentially that means that I run the team that engages with all of the technology partners or ISVs in our ecosystem of organizations that provide solutions for public sector. And for us, public sector means government, education, and nonprofit, and that's worldwide. Specifically here in the U.S., we look at government at federal, state, and local. Education is higher ed and K-12, and then we cover nonprofits as well. Nonprofits could include nonprofit organizations as well as non-government organizations like World Bank and UN, et cetera. So our job, my team's job, is to work with those organizations, any company who builds software or product for those customers, and do it right. Basically, get the solution built on AWS, have it architected and developed properly so it's going to be an adequate solution, get through the compliance requirements so that customers can actually use it in a compliant way, and then work with the partners on how to get it set up so that customers can buy it and that those partners are actively selling into the customer base. So things like joint go-to-market programs and engagement with the AWS sales field and our capture desk. It's my team's organization to make sure that all happens so that any partner who has a solution in this area has the greatest chance for success.
That's a broad area of responsibility. ISVs, independent software vendors, have to be a very important component of the business, especially in a cloud business where you're driving consumption and utilization. And government, education, and nonprofits must be a very significant segment of the business. How do you measure success at the end of the day?
It is a really big business for us and critical. Again, when you look at our customers, very few customers in this place just want to buy just flat AWS. Typically, they want solutions. And these solution providers, software providers, are provide that. success for me is, one, helping our partners succeed. Because if our partners succeed, then we know that we're meeting the customer need. So we know out there that government agencies and education institutions have significant needs for modernizing their IT. And we have really good solutions for them in the cloud, in AWS. Helping the partners get to the point where those solutions are now consumable by the customers, both technically, accreditation and compliance-wise, and then they have actual procurement channels to get it, is key. So ultimately, success is when I have a partner who wins a big deal and does a big deployment at a customer base. That, to me, is the greatest success. And making sure that it happens consistently across the public sector market for all workloads so that we know that our customers have everything they need to achieve their missions is key.
And your team does both the, I'll call it the technical enablement, as well as the go-to-market strategy for those partners?
Yes, we work closely with counterparts that we have on the commercial side. So if we have a big partner, a big ISV who has both commercial customers and public sector customers, we'll share responsibility on the technical enablement. And in some cases, they may have a really big commercial business and not as big of a public sector business, in which case typically we'll let them take the lead on the technical enablement. And our role on the technical enablement side will primarily be focused around how do we enable them for public sector? So how do we get them passed or through some compliance requirements, or how do we get them into specific regions? Like, for example, AWS has a region that's ITAR compliant called GovCloud. How do we get them into GovCloud so they can deploy, or how do we connect them in with our national security partners to get into our C2S contract, et cetera? So there's enablement there. Now, if it's a public sector only ISV, then all they do there is, yes, we're just as responsible for the technical enablement as well as the go-to-market. And for the latter one, again, when we split the responsibility and the commercial team might have the technical enablement, we're still going to manage and be responsible for go-to-market and joint sales engagement with the AWS sales and capture teams.
What do you think makes your value proposition unique to both customers and partners? And in other words, why does a customer partner choose AWS over a competitive offering?
You know, I think we start with just a discussion of why cloud and the value proposition for that. It's gotten fairly proven in most organizations will look to cloud, and the cost value prop is pretty well proven. And many organizations will start there. We're just looking to reduce our CapEx and go to operational expenditures. And that's realized pretty quickly. But what we've seen is from a cloud standpoint, we're actually seeing security as a selling point now, we'll call it, as a value add point, in that organizations are able to see and manage their security better in cloud environments. And I would say the end all from a value prop of cloud in general is just increased enablement and agility. Organizations are just able to do their mission better and faster and being able to innovate more quickly with less risk. So that agencies can now take on projects that they previously thought they couldn't. And that's a big thing. And that's cloud in general. So why AWS in the cloud? And there's a couple of things that I throw into that. One is just the sheer scale of our global infrastructure. We have 14 regions throughout the entire world with significant infrastructure for each of those. Each of our regions has multiple availability zones so that we can be sure our customers can be sure of high availability, redundancy, data integrity, et cetera. And then our cloud in general has significant capabilities built into it as well for solution providers. Things like, you know, data storage and database services, big data analytics services, and then end user services like VDI, and ultimately even the more aggressive machine learning and artificial intelligence services. Like we have a service called Recognition that does image recognition, Poly and Lex, which are text-to-voice and voice recognition services, all built in. That vast array of not only just the breadth of the infrastructure, but the array of services and the pace at which we're advancing the technology is something that is a huge benefit to all of our partners out there and all of our customers. They can now build things and get them out faster and have global reach much more quickly than they could ever done in the past.
I get it. You know, your organization Amazon has just had amazing growth, and you have a core set of leadership principles. And I was wondering if you could take a moment here to share with our listeners how that impacts your partner and customer engagement uniquely.
It's a good observation. Everything we do at Amazon really is driven by our leadership principles. it drives behavior. It drives how we make decisions. And those things, it helps, they help us keep us track and focus on what's really important. And ultimately, that's going to be our customers. And our customers includes our partners. We consider our partners our customers, as well as our mutual customers that we have together. So when we're deciding on something, we're planning something out, whether it's taking on a new initiative or driving a new campaign, or I'm thinking about investing in something with a partner or taking on a new partner for development, I'm going to always refer back to the principles and make sure that my thinking is in line with those. You know, are we thinking big enough? Is this really the right thing for the customers? Have we dug deep enough into the problem to know that we're making the right decisions around that? And it's a great guideline to make sure that we are staying customer obsessed and we're being consistent. And that consistency is good for our partners because they always know what they're going to get with us. There's no hidden agendas or anything. And ultimately, I think it just creates a better place for our mutual customers.
You know, you made a comment about treating your partners like your customers. I find that to be somewhat unique. How does partner recruiting happen at AWS?
Yeah, it's multiple ways. And in many cases, you know, our partner programs, I should know this off the top of my head, but I think we're about 6 years old in our APN. So there's a partner program we have at Amazon called the Amazon Partner Network, or APN. And it's been evolving over the last several years. And in many cases, we have organizations that have acted as partners, I'll say, lowercase p, meaning we work closely together. We're selling together. We're doing things. We're actually partnering, but we're not a formally established partner as part of, meaning they haven't enrolled in our APN. We're not actually doing formal go-to-market together, et cetera. And that's okay. And I tell organizations this too. We can work together. We can be lowercase partners every day. You don't have to join our partner organization, but there's value in it. And how do we go out and find those partners to bring into it, et cetera? One, it starts with just awareness and making sure that one, we're doing the good enough job to educate our field and everybody out there that the APN exists. So they self-select in. And we've always been self-service driven, meaning, you know, you could sign up for our APN, you can enroll as a partner and develop a partner, develop as a partner, and your competencies and go up in your tier levels very easily without ever talking to anybody at AWS. But that said, there is value in it. So we typically will assign a partner development manager to every partner who's developing if they've gotten to a certain level, a tiering level, a standard tier. And then we have somebody who helps mentor them and guide them through the development process. So in many cases, we'll find that a partner just self-selects in, they start to develop, we'll recognize they're a developing partner, we'll reach out from a PDM standpoint and start that relationship. In other cases, we'll actually go out and recruit if we have a specific need. Hey, we need partners in this particular state to bid on these contracts. Let's go out and recruit and find the right ones. And we'll look for partners that meet criteria that we see are common in our customer base. And that's just as much my team's job as anything, too.
So you're proactively recruiting partners based on a specific need, a customer need, or a need in the business?
Yes, we will. And as mature as the cloud has gotten, we're always going to need more. And my biggest concern out there is that the customer demand is so great that we just don't have enough partners to satisfy that demand. And that's both on the consulting side and people who are qualified at delivering services to our customers, whether it's migration or data management or managed service providers, and then even the solutions that people want to buy. Organizations don't want to buy licensed software to deploy into their own infrastructure anymore. They want cloud-based solutions. They want SaaS-based solutions. And there aren't enough of them out there yet. And my job is to get more of them. So yes, I'm actively recruiting, always looking for more.
So what characteristics do you believe make a great AWS partner?
There's several. I think that the first thing that I'll look for is a culture that does align with those leadership principles. And when I see that their business operates like ours and they share a lot of the same principles or all of them, that helps. They know that we're all going to be on the same page. The other thing that I really look for is clarity of vision of their leadership. If the leadership is not sure what they want to be and they're not completely bought into cloud, I know it's going to be difficult for them to make the decisions they need to make to truly succeed in the cloud market. So I look for that. High bias for action and hungry. I really like partners that want to make a difference, that are reaching out, trying to make a change, and proactively growing their business. And beyond that, experience in the industry. You know, I'm ideal specifics in government and education. I need partners who have, I look for partners who have that capability, who've been in this business before so they can be credible. And with that, trustworthy and credibility. You know, that's key too. I mean, partners and partnerships are based on relationships, and we've got to be able to trust each other. We've got to be able to rely on each other over time.
So when you think in your mind of the most successful partner you've worked with in your time and role, what made them so successful?
It almost always starts with leadership. Having a decisive leader who's innovative, who's aggressive, and provides clarity for the rest of the organization. I think without fail, having somebody at the top who gets it and can clarify and make it clear to their organization and builds their strategy around it is one of the first things. From there, high quality technical talent is a differentiator. You know, hiring the right people and keeping them, that goes back to the leadership. If you have a leader who can inspire people and keep those technical talent there, that's critical. Effective sales and marketing, we can't underscore that. And then ultimately a model that supports partnering, but not just with AWS, with other organizations too, because typically what I'll find is very few partners can be all things to all customers. They may be missing a technology capability. They may not have a contract vehicle to which they can sell into a customer. So having a model that allows them to plug in what they need is really valuable. And I found that those who can do that well succeed very quickly.
So I call that partner-to-partner engagement. Do you do things to facilitate that partner-to-partner engagement? What attributes or things that you bring forward to help with that?
Yeah, absolutely we do. We do several things. One, it's part of my team's responsibility to make sure that we're proactively looking for joint engagement, specifically from my technology, from the ISVs and our consulting partner channel and reseller channel. So we'll coordinate meetings and we'll coordinate events where we actually will bring everybody into a room together and do cross-pollinization, like speed dating, if you will. And it's a great way of getting people engaged, involved, and having that cross-partnering happen. The other one is just being cognizant and having solutionary leads. So on my team, I've organized us with leads for different workloads. Like I have a lead for storage, I have a lead for DevOps, a lead for security and compliance, for business applications, for big data analytics. And those leads have good perspective on the overall ecosystem. And it allows them to find the right matches for the partners that we work with. So that leadership plus the events and the actual requirement that I put on my people to foster this is a piece of that success.
What about common myths partners have about working with AWS? Are there any that come to mind?
Probably the biggest one is that AWS is just too big and impersonal to work with us. We're just a little company. Why would AWS even care about us? We're just a drop in the bucket. And the fact is that we're happy to partner and work with anybody and provide resources that just about any organization needs, especially in some cases, particularly in public sector, where there's huge opportunity for small businesses and socioeconomic categorized businesses that we need to work with, because we need organizations like that that can bid on special contract set-asides and other things too. So understanding that a small organization can have large impact and AWS will do our best to work with you no matter what is critical. And I think a lot of organizations just cut themselves out without a lot of even considering that.
Have you had instances where partners have failed working with you or the organization? And what was one thing you wish you had said to them?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have. It comes back to that leadership vision. Organizations that have failed are ones that just they couldn't commit. They tried to spread their bets too thinly, covering all bases, and they never got clarity on what they wanted to be. And that didn't allow them to make the right investments and develop the credibility they needed. So you know, my guidance to them would be, what I would have said to them is make a decision. You know, if you don't want to be a cloud provider or billing, that's okay. That's your business decision. But be clear about that. And if you do want to go cloud, if you want to work with AWS, well, then let's really do it together and be decisive about it. That's going to be your greatest opportunity for success. I think the quote that I use is you can't run free in the field if you're straddling a fence. So
you can't run free in the field if you're straddling a fence.
Yep.
Sounds somewhat painful.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be straddling that fence, believe me.
So Dan, 3 years at AWS, what are the things that have changed the most and what are the things that have stayed the same since you joined the organization?
The things that have changed the most, I think that we've absolutely matured as an organization. We're still, in my opinion, we feel very much in startup mode. But the systems and programs that we have in place to support our partners in a structured way are absolutely, have gotten much more mature and much easier to consume for our partners. So now there's much more programmatic support for what they need to do and systems to support things like lead generation and follow-up. And we have marketing programs that they can sign up for on the web that didn't exist even just a couple of years ago. So the programmatic support that we have that allows us to scale and allows our partners to scale has gotten significantly better. I think what stayed the same is our focus on the customer and go back to the leadership principles and the idea that you know, it's still all about the customer. It's about providing that experience. And even as mature as we get, we can't stop innovating. We can't stop working with a high bias for action and feeling like we're a startup. That's something I don't think ever is going to change.
So Dan, any advice you have for partners looking to engage with you or your organization?
At the very top, some advice that I give is one, feel free to reach out. AWS does have partner development managers, and our responsibility is to help the partner organizations out there. And if you're in our APN, and if you're at least at the standard level, you likely have a PDM who's responsible for you, a partner development manager responsible for you. So if you don't know who it is, connect on the portal, send us an email, and we'll get you the right person. Feel free to send me an email, too, if you don't have any idea where to go. But expect that from us. And again, we're a growing organization, so sometimes it's hard to be immediately responsive. But be patient, but be persistent, and expect of us that we are providing that level of support to you.
And the best way to reach you, Dan, is through your email address?
Yes, that's right, which is dankasun@amazon.com.
Okay, great. And we're going to shift gears a little bit here because, as you might know from listening to other episodes, I'm fascinated by how people got to this particular spot in their life and their career. And I was hoping you might share with our listeners a little bit about your journey. How did you get started working in technology? Take our listeners through it.
Sure. I'll go way back to the Stone Ages when I started here. I've always been deeply interested in technology. I started writing computer programs and coding at 11. And I always loved computers, and I knew that's what I was going to be doing. Went to university, graduated as a computer engineer, and this was just as the PC market started to take off, just before the internet was there, like the very early 90s or so. And I was doing mainframe development at the time, and I saw what was happening in the PC world, and I saw the internet company coming, and I was really enamored with it. I knew that's where things needed to be, and I knew at the time that Microsoft was the holy grail. Yeah, if you wanted to get into the PC, getting onto the internet back then, that was it. And I was a technologist. I wanted to write programs. I wanted to code. I wanted to be in project. And I was living on the East Coast at the time, didn't have a direct path to getting out to Redmond. So I said, okay, well, let me see if I can find a job in the field with them. I'll work there for a couple of years, and then I'll graduate and I'll move out west and become a programmer on one of their product teams, et cetera. That was my goal. So I ended up taking a job as a technical salesperson out of New York City, with the expectation that, again, I would migrate. I wasn't really into sales. I wasn't thinking about it. I just was doing it as a means to the end. What I found, though, is that I really enjoyed working with customers. I loved getting out there and helping them solve their problems and work the unique solutions and situations that they were in. I liked it as much as I liked writing code and doing my own program. And I realized that I could have just as much impact out here in the technical role as I could if I went back to the mothership at the time. And for example, in the early days of .NET, yeah, I was working with some small companies out there to drive adoption. And we took it from 0% to a significant percentage of the market in financial service and healthcare with a couple of small organizations. And that's when the light bulb really went off to me that to succeed in this market, you've got to have an ecosystem. You got to have some great partners out there. And I found just tremendous gratification out of watching them succeed. And that was the first taste I got of what it really meant to to build an ecosystem and work with partners too, because their success was enabling me to succeed. And that's where I got that taste. Now, fast forward a couple more years, I've always had a passion for education and in government. And I had the opportunity inside of Microsoft as well to run a team focused on building the ecosystem for public sector. And you know, that was great for me because now I could scratch my itch and really wanting to have that further gratification of helping support education, helping support our government too, and work in the industries that were really important to me while doing the technical work that I liked. And that was great. And then a couple more years forward, I got the itch to do something new. I wanted to get out and kind of strike into my own, do something a little more startup-y. And that's when the opportunity to join AWS came up. And I saw at the time that the cloud really was an inevitable wave. This was the future. Just like I did back in the 90s where I felt that, you know, the PC and the internet was there. I know the cloud was that here. And I wanted to find a role that allowed me to take advantage of that as well. And I was really fortunate the opportunity at AWS came up. And it allowed me to do the things that I really liked. You know, I love the technology. I love working with the partner ecosystem and building solutions. And I love public sector. And I just kind of a unique opportunity that I had that got to me where I am today.
No, that's great. And was there one piece of advice, some worthwhile piece of advice you received when you got started at AWS?
Probably the most valuable piece I got was don't get comfortable. And at first I thought it was a warning. I thought, oh my gosh, don't get comfortable yet. But really the idea was, is that the world's going to move so fast and things are going to be going so fast. And we value innovation and bias for action and ownership so much that if you ever find yourself sitting back and kind of not feeling uncomfortable, then you're not doing the right thing. You're not learning. You're not growing. So if you're a person who doesn't thrive on feeling a little off center and being uncomfortable, it's going to be challenging for you to succeed. So make sure to embrace that. Embrace that you're not going to be comfortable. You're always going to feel like you're behind and you don't know enough for the next opportunity because that's the new normal for you. And I have embraced it, and that's something that I think about every day.
So be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Were there any hurdles you had to overcome in your career, and what did you learn from them?
Yeah. Yes. Again, go back. I was a coder. You know, I'm a technology guy. My happiest day was sitting at my computer writing code by myself all day. And when I got into sales and got into working with partners, it's a different world. And I never liked the socializing part. I'm not a schmoozer. I wasn't good at networking. And it was just something I was never comfortable doing. In addition to that, and many people don't know this, but I have a pretty serious hearing impairment. And it makes it difficult for me to hear in crowded situations and you know, large meetings or trade shows, networking events, dinners, you know, all the things, a lot of things that we have to do in this industry, specifically if you're working with a partner industry, when you think about the trade show things too. And it's hard because I found that I really can't participate or engage in those scenarios as much as I would like to. So you know, to overcome it, the very first thing, I just had to get over myself, and I still do. I push myself. And yes, I know going back to being uncomfortable, working in those scenarios and being in situations where you don't like networking, it's a crowd of people you don't know, or you're trying to get engaged with a new industry, you know, just do it. And that's something that I work every single day on. It's an active focus. In terms of the other things, you know, what I do is I try to over-index on the areas that are more amenable to how I can communicate. So smaller meetings and having, you know, more direct conversations. And really probably the most valuable thing I can do is surround myself and hire people who have strong competencies in the areas that I don't. You know, people who are really good at networking, love getting out there. It's like, great, you do that, I'll focus on some other things and get those things done. And that's been a real benefit to be able to work in an organization that allowed me to do that.
So is there a quote you live by or think of often?
Probably the one that I really enjoy or do think about here, it's one from Margaret Mead. And it's never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And the reason I think about that is it's, you know, everybody And I spent a lot of my career thinking that, you know, I wasn't at a big enough level and I wasn't advanced enough. I didn't have a big enough role to make a big difference or to really know the right thing to do. And as I reflect back on it now, I'm like, gosh, you know, everybody does. Everybody can have an impact. And all it takes is a bias for action and the self-confidence to get it done. And if you think that you're too small to do something, you know, the people who changed the world were no different than you and I. And we, if you want to change the world, you've got to put yourself in that position and not expect that other people are going to do it for you.
I love that quote, Dan.
Yeah.
We're going to make sure we put that in the show notes for our listeners. Is there one book you've read that you would recommend to our listeners or that you gift often?
Yes, there is a book, and it's, I would say it's not necessarily related to partnering, but it's something I do enjoy and it's something that I have a particular passion for. And that's a book called Most Likely to Succeed by Tony Wagner and Ted Dintersmith. And the reason that this book is important to me is, one, I go back to, I have a strong passion for education and improving education in our country. Part of that is because I have such respect and admiration for innovators and people who innovate. And one of the challenges I've seen in our school systems is that it's not necessarily driving innovation and teaching innovation to our students. This book addresses that, and it looks at our school system and how school systems could be to build the next generation of innovators and creators that we all need, that you and I need, and everybody in this industry needs to bring our systems to the next level. So it's my way of looking at how can we prime the pump and get the technical talent and the innovation talent into the workforce that we're going to need to get to the next century.
Nice. And any advice from that book specifically that you want to call out here for partners?
One, get really engaged with your local school systems and focus on building and providing experiences to students and to learners that they're not going to be able to get in school. Give them opportunities to do more computer programming, building, learn about new technologies and other things too. That school doesn't start and stop with the school day, and that everybody in the community has a responsibility to reach back, and learning is a 24-hour a day, 365-day a year thing, and that we should play a role.
So Most Likely to Succeed. We're going to provide a link to that in our show notes as well. Hey, Dan, I know we're compressed in terms of schedules here. I want to thank you for joining the Ultimate Guide to Partnering and being here with our listeners today.
Thank you, Vince. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.